Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your professional handicapped host, James Cox, and I have another interview today. He came back before. We had him May 27th, 2021, so it's been a few years, about 4 years, right? Yeah, so Mr. David Ellison. David, how are you doing, sir?
How you doing there, brother? How are you?
Good. Well, thank you so much for coming back. And last time we talked about your album that was out, No Cover. And that's fantastic. You know, I still want to thank you again for doing this song, Not Fragile by Bachman Turner Overdrive. You know, that's my favorite song on the album.
That is so funny you bring that up. God, I can't believe it's been that long since we talked so that, because that was like back in COVID days.
That was 2021. Yeah.
Yeah. God, you know, it's so funny because so BTO, I mean, I always give Kiss credit, you know, for being kind of my first big, you know, music crush, if you will. And they were for sure the Destroyer album and Kiss Alive and that stuff. But really, it started with Bachman Turner Overdrive, and in particular, that Not Fragile record. And that, you know, the needle drop, I go over to my friend, John Stolp was his name in Jackson. And he had that album. And I remember, you know, the needle drop is, you know, the opening, the bass line. And I didn't even know what that was. I'm like, what is that? I didn't even know what that instrument was, the electric bass, because electric guitars, it was all new. And this was, you know, that album came out in 1974. Yeah. And that was right around the time I started getting into music, 74, 75. You know, I was 10, 11 years old. You know, and then I, you know, Kiss Destroyer came out in 76, and I got a bass guitar that summer. So right as I was, you know, 11 and a half years old, I got my bass guitar and that's where the whole thing started, for me. And, you know, it's funny because my life today is the same as it was then, regarding just, you know, wake up, listen to tunes, get a bass, grab a guitar, start jamming, start writing, you know, the whole thing. So it's funny that, you know, that it's because, you know, with No Cover, just to touch on that for a minute, you know, I wanted to just cover the songs I liked. I didn't want necessarily to have to cover the hits, even though there's some hits on there, Rebel Yell by Billy Idol, Eat the Rich by Crocus, you know, so there's some hit songs, some singles on there. But for the most part, you know, Sheer Heart Attack, you know, to me, that was such a great song off News of the World. With Doro and Bumblefoot, we could actually pull it off, you know, Todd Kearns from Slash's band, you know, singing Sweet F.A., which was, you know, the Desolation Boulevard album by Styx. By Sweet ran side by side BTO and then, you know, the Styx Equinox album, you know, these records that had, Lorelei and Lady and all this, you know, these early records, you know, of all these bands. I like listening to the No Cover record. I listen to it just kind of as a fan sometimes. Man, you know what? That's a damn good album.
That's a damn good album, right?
It's a damn good album. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you cover songs that you want to hear, because I want to hear some you did that you grew up with, you know. Because I'm a big fan of music and I want to experience what everybody else experienced. You know, I'm always looking for new songs, new stuff. So it's so wonderful that you did what you wanted to do instead of what you had to do. You know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And it's, you know, it's funny. You know, even when Megadeth, when we covered Paranoid on the Nativity in Black album, you know, Paranoid was the very first Sabbath song that I ever played when I was, I don't know, 15 years old or so in my cover band, probably my band Taz back in Minnesota when I was growing up. And I did not really understand Black Sabbath. It was kind of a, it was definitely a generation ahead of me. You know, it wasn't what I would call the hippie generation. It wasn't, even though when it came out, I guess in 69, 70, whatever, you know, Sabbath, you know, to me was very much not part of, the 60s, you know, that movement. And it was heavy. It had riffs. So to me, it was kind of like Nazareth, Sabbath. These bands were kind of just ahead of then Sweet, BTO, Kiss, Styx, Foreigner, Aerosmith. You know, I remember when, you know, Dream On, if you're my age, when Aerosmith Dream On came out, I mean, that was just such a hauntingly beautiful, dark song, you know, and you know, I always kind of look at it like, you know, if rock and roll sort of started in the 50s, you know, out of rhythm and blues, you know, in the 60s, it was this wild experimental decade. And then by the 70s, it's kind of like they reined it in and started to get it a bit more focused. You know, yeah. Records were made better. Performances were more, they were less jammy. Exactly. They were more focused. Yeah. Guitar tones were better. Like suddenly, you know, the talk box, the flanger, the wah-wah. You know,
especially when you heard, you know, Dire Straits, you know, guitar sound, that was amazing. I mean, that brought a whole new level to the guitar, you know.
You know, it's funny you say Dire Straits, because you think of Mark Knopfler and then Lindsey Buckingham, you know, from Fleetwood Mac, you know, those guys didn't play with a plectrum. They played with their fingers, right? They
were like, really? Okay.
I don't even, it's funny, I was at the grocery store a couple weeks ago and I heard a Fleetwood Mac song, and it was this cool solo. It's a popular song. The name I forget it right now, but, I was going, dude, this guy's not even using a plectrum, and he's freaking killing the solo right here, you know? And it was, you know, Fleetwood Mac was another band that was very cool. Fleetwood Mac and the Eagles, probably The Long Run. That was an album that came out, I think, probably in my sophomore, maybe my junior year of high school, probably my sophomore year. And that was when I was starting to party. You know, we're having keg parties, and you know, when your parents leave town,
good old times, right?
I played in the marching band. I played tenor saxophone and orchestra band, which meant I had to also play in the marching band. And I remember going out and you know, in Minnesota, we'd go on the school bus, we'd go to these different towns, and we'd do the parades. You know, these different summertime parades, you know, they were like the powwow days and these different things, these, you know, Sherburn, Minnesota, Mountain Lake, these small little towns, you know. And and I remember listening to The Long Run, especially Those Shoes. That was that had that great, Joe Walsh had that really great talk box solo in that, and it was a solo, but it was also just, you know, a riff of the song, you know. And to me, that was my favorite Eagles record was The Long Run. I still listen to that, you know, when I fly on airplanes. I like that one.
My favorite Eagles album was the one that I think it's Health Frozen Over or something. It's like one of the live shows. I got it. You know, that was a gift. So I'm going to cherish that the gift, you know? So, okay. So you have an album out now, called Unbreakable under the name Elson and Soto, Jeff Scott Soto, from the band Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Never seen them, but I heard they put them on the banger of the show, you know, every time they come to Columbia, you know?
Man, if you ever get a chance to see them, you have to see them. It is a phenomenal. I mean, it's indescribable. It's like Kiss playing Christmas music. but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the spectacle of Kiss. The songs are heavy. I remember my mom, you know, God rest her soul, now she would go see that. She got turned onto it, and she would go in Minneapolis. She'd always go every year to St. Paul, and this was after Al Petrelli was in Megadeth with me. And And she'd always say, she goes, "Oh, Dave, I could just see you up there and playing in that band, you know." And I was like, "Well, maybe one day, you know what I mean?"
Right.
And it's funny because actually the last year Al was in Megadeth, you know, here's a little trivia. He actually had quit Megadeth during that last tour. He was done. He was actually had accepted. Paul O'Neill had called him and he had accepted his place back in Trans-Siberian Orchestra. He agreed to stay in the group to finish the Rude Awakening live DVD that we did.
Okay.
But things were pretty rough that last year in 2001, man. It was pretty rough there. And and so he was, it's interesting because we were playing at the Fillmore in Denver and he pulls me aside. He goes, "Hey, we're on the bus." He goes, "Hey, let's go outside. I got to have a smoke. Let's go for a walk." And so he lights up a cigarette and he's like, "Hey, so I'm going back to work for Paul O'Neill. And, you know, I'm just letting you know, if you guys need a replacement, I'll help you get a replacement. If you want me to stay, because I know you just got this DVD coming up, you know." So his thick New York accent. And he was cool enough to stay and finish it. And obviously he gave an incredible performance. But then, as you know, the band broke up a couple months after that. But he actually asked me if I wanted to go tour with TSO that year. And I wanted to so bad because I loved it. He earlier that year, or maybe the year before, we were flying to Japan and he said, "Hey, check this CD out. There's a little something I played on, you know." And I knew that of him being in Sabotage, but I was not aware of Trans-Siberian Orchestra and how Sabotage had morphed into TSO. And I remember flying in San Francisco for our connection to go to Tokyo and listening to it and going, "My God, this is amazing." And I love Paul O'Neill's work. I love Hall of the Mountain King. When it was Sabotage, Megadeth, Dio, that was when I first heard Paul's work. You know, then I kind of learned some of the other stuff that he did with Aerosmith as well. But man, I love Paul's productions and just became a fan. I became a friend of his as well, you know, over the years. But so it's funny with you know, then he gets, you know, Al. So fast forward, I end up not playing the TSO. The band breaks up. Megadeth disbands. And, you know, I was too sick that year, honestly. I was just, everything was going on inside of Megadeth. I was physically ill. I could not get better. I was going to doctors all around the world. And then in February, Dave calls me and disbands Megadeth. And suddenly I was healed in an afternoon. It was like the weight of all of it and all
right, just washed away,
crushing
right?
my soul. Yeah. So I was free of it, you know. But Al and I remained great friends. And so it's funny. He's got Jeff Scott Soto singing in TSO with him, and Jeff's great there. And you know, so Jeff and I have known each other a long time. Of course, we're all Yngwie fans. We're all fans of what he did there, and I've gotten to know some of his solo work, just hanging out with him, listening to it, and really coming to appreciate, you know, his solo work as well. And of course, in the Rockstar movie, which is one of my favorite movies ever, you know, super cool. So yeah, no, it's been great making two records with Jeff. We made Vacation in the Underworld. Actually, we did that probably right around the time we talked back in 2021. We were probably working on that first Ellis and Soto record then. You know, this one came together pretty quickly, kind of unexpectedly. Andy Martangeli and I were working on the music as far back as 2023. I think we were working on the writing songs in up in London, in Wembley, and you know, then kind of unexpectedly last year I was in Europe doing a little open air festival down by Rome, and Andy and I were just kind of talking about, you know, next steps, what should we do next, and I said, you know, I'd like to just maybe do a cover. And so you should do Queen, Death on Two Legs, and, you know, because I love, you know, Death on Two Legs. It's like, again, that was the needle drop, right? That was the first song on Night at the Opera, and such a fucking cool, that's like Queen's Detroit Rock City. You know what I mean?
It's
the needle drop. It's right. Yeah. It's a killer song. So, and then right away, Andy's like, "Dude, we got to call Jeff." So I called Jeff and I said, "Hey man, you want to And he's a huge Queen fan, so I knew the answer was yes. He goes, "Hey, you want to do a Queen?" So I said, "Fuck yeah, brother." And I said, "Hey, not for nothing, to use an Al Petrelli-ism, not for nothing. Yeah. Would you be down for doing another record?" I said, "Me and Andy pretty much have it written." He goes, "Hell yeah, brother, I'd be totally down." So, you know, again, it was just kind of the right thing at the right time. Schedules allowed it. And I mean, man, we you know, got all of his parts and the lyrics written and the vocals and everything recorded like within about four to six weeks done. I needed to get it done before he went back out with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. One thing about TSO is, you know, it's a set, you know, months of the year. So,
They always come to Columbia every Christmas, and I have to go see them this year. You know, that's great.
Yeah. So that's why with Jeff, it's like you kind of know, okay, look, pretty much from, you know, kind of mid-October, late October on, he's out, you know, so he's out until, you know, January 1 or so. So, we were able to get it done. And, you know, while he was out doing that, Andy and I were finishing up all the rest of the production of the record and getting it done. And yeah, I think I'm really happy with it, man. I love listening to it as a fan. You know, it's nice when you can be a fan of your own work and kind of sit back and listen to it the same way I'd listen to a Kiss record or BTO. You know what I mean? I can listen to it and really dig it and go, "God, that's a good song, man. These guys are pretty good. Oh, wait.
That's me playing. Yeah, hell yeah. The two songs that I really, really love on the album Unbreakable is Ghosts and Vengeance. The way that Ghost bleeds into the song Vengeance, that's great. And since you mentioned Rockstar, that's basically loose off of Tim Ripper, you know.
Tim Irony.
And I've had him on the show, but he's great. So that's a fantastic video, you know. Have you always wanted to work with Tim? And like, what was the discussion like? Was it like gung-ho for this?
Two things about that. First of all, thank you. You know, it's funny, Ghosts. I a friend of mine in Phoenix listening to the record. He just messaged me. He goes, "Man, I love your new album." He goes, "I love the song Ghosts." I'm like, "Isn't that so funny that, you know, this instrumental song, you know, Andy came up with it on the first record, Vacation in the Underworld." I had more of a song that it was just a riff that I'd written in the studio, and I said, "Hey, hit record, let's get this," and it turned into a little musical piece, kind of more of a bass feature. And on this one, Andy brought that in. I thought, you know, I mean, you deserve a spotlight on this. You should really have your own, you know, kind of a TSO, kind of like what Petrelli does. You know, he gets these featured parts in a TSO show where they're just, it's guitar melodies, you know, and no vocals, just a guitar melody, so Andy really, he really knocked it out of the park on that one. And you're right, Vengeance. So here's an interesting thing. So we're at Battery Studios. Our friend Alessio, he has a recording studio called Rogue Recorders. And he had just this last year moved it inside of the famous Battery Studios up in London. Now, Battery Studios is where they did the Iron Maiden records, Killers, and a number of the Beast. They did Def Leppard, High and Dry, and Pyromania there. They've cut, you know, Brian Adams, Waking Up the Neighbors. I mean, just these freaking killer records, man. These legendary records. So you kind of go, okay, where's the voodoo and the magic in the room, you know? Right. And in fact, Andrew Watt just bought the console that was in there. Moved it to LA. And I mean, this is a famous console. Like, they recorded Clash records. They recorded We Will Rock You on that console. They recorded Nevermind the Bollocks by the Sex Pistols. I mean, come on, just, you know, it's like that movie Grohl, you know, Sound City, where he bought the studio, the console out of the Sound City studio, you know, because it's where his career started with Nirvana. They cut Nevermind on that record, as well as Not Fragile from BTO. They cut that record there. They cut Fleetwood Mac records there. They cut Cheap Trick, Heaven Tonight. You know, okay, again, you know, legendary shit, right? So Battery Studios is basically the London version of Sound City, you know, where Mutt Lange and Martin Birch were like the staff producers there. So that's why, you know, Iron Maiden happened into the studio. Guess what? Martin's now their producer, you know. Def Leppard happens in there, and now freaking Mutt Lang is producing their records, you know. So legendary shit, you know.
Right.
I'm just a fan of all that stuff, you know. But we're there. We're shooting these videos, and we were taking a break just for a minute, and our guitar player Walter comes down the stairs, and he goes, hey guys, he goes, I don't know if you saw this, but I think Ozzy just died. We're like, what? And he shows this right, it literally just happened, that Sky News story that went out,
and because it happened like a week after the big concert, right?
Yeah. So I had stayed, you know, in Europe through the summer, you know, after the gig, I stayed behind so we could work at the battery there and work on these videos for me and Jeff. And I was like, holy hell. I mean, just the finality, the gravity from the celebration of Back to the Beginning to now just this heart-wrenching sadness. And then it was like, well, that's, you know, literally then, you know, Andy Martangeli, he directed the Vengeance video. He's upstairs getting all the lighting and everything set up. He goes, okay, guys, we got to get this knocked out. I'm like, okay, I'll go in. So I'm doing my take while literally mourning Ozzy. I literally learned that his passing a half hour before. I'm just like going, I'm glad you can't really see my face. I mean, I wasn't in tears, you know, really, but I was just this weight of my heart.
Don't you have to?
God. Yeah. You're kind of like, can we just call it? Let's do this tomorrow, you know,
Let's start tomorrow or next week or something to give me time to mourn, you know?
There's just kind of an ironic footnote of that video. Every time I see it, I just relive that. Moment right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I literally that press release, that Sky News story just went out literally a half hour before my part was recorded. But anyway, back to Tim. Yeah, Tim is fantastic, you know. So
he's such a good guy.
You know, it's funny. When he was in Judas Priest, we did a couple shows in Mexico. We played Mexico City at the arena and in Monterrey. Mexico, there's a big amphitheater there, and we had played. It was interesting because we grew up opening for Priest, you know, and now at this point we were headlining over Priest. I first met Tim at the hotel at the gym, and just said hello, and he's a sweet, wonderful guy, and I see him perform that night on stage and next couple of nights, of course, and you know, at these two shows. And and then, you know, we became friends. He asked me to record on his solo album. What was it? Play My Game or something. Whatever it was. And Wendy Dio was managing him. And this is at the time when Ronnie James Dio had gone back to play with Vinny Appice, Tony Iommi, and Geezer Butler. And they called it Heaven and Hell.
And so
Wendy put us, Tim asked me to go on the road with him that summer. This was 2009. So I did. And we came over here to Europe, and we did some dates with Heaven and Hell. And it was the last time I talked with Ronnie, actually, after one of the shows. We had a really good hang, and he was just drinking some wine. We basically closed the venue. Some venue in Germany. Yeah. And we're just hanging out bullshit. It was fucking great, man. It was so great just hanging out bullshit and closing the place up. And then we played Download, actually. We opened the main stage at Download that year. And it's funny because that was that at that gig, the agent John Jackson from the K2 agency, who books Iron Maiden and Metallica, he booked Megadeth over the years, and he came to me and he said, and I was not in Megadeth at that moment, and he said, he goes, hey David, I got this fantastic idea that I want to do next year. It's called the Big Four. It'll be Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax. And he said, Lars and James are on board, and I'm flying over next week to go see Slayer and Megadeth. They're on the Canadian Carnage tour. I'm flying over to go talk to them about it. And I think he'd already talked to Anthrax about it, and they were Charlie and Scott were on board. And I told John, the agent, I said, you know, it's so funny because Dave and I had been talking. I said, I just got a text from Dave right before I left my house to come over here and tour with Ripper. And I said, I think I'll probably be back in Megadeth by the time we do this. I said, things are looking pretty good for me and him, and we're getting along well. And so, sure enough, you know, I actually knew about the Big Four before Dave and Slayer did. So, because he told me about it backstage. And then, of course, it happened, and I ended up back in the band. And so it was kind of a cool little full circle, you know, with that. Yeah. So, but yeah, the Ripper's great, man. They came through with KK's Priest. They came through Phoenix, with Accept, last year. And when I went down to the show to see the guys, I asked him, I said, Hey, not for nothing, you know, would you be cool? Would you throw down a vocal on me and Jeff's new album? He goes, hell yeah. So, he was super agreeable.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's
great. A great job on it. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, I wish we had more time with you. We're running out of time, actually.
Yeah, sorry, but, I'm talking so much.
I'm going to talk to you. If I can get you booked again for like that hour, because I got so many things. I got you coffee. I got you books that I want to discuss with you. I mean, it's all good.
Sure,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, there's a whole lifetime of stuff to try to fit in.
All right.
James, it was great to chat with you again, man. Thanks, sir. Thanks for doing what you do and keeping everything current out there. So I appreciate you. Your appreciation for our new album too. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's so great. I'm gonna plaster it all over the place. You know, when I upload this video. Man. Okay.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, sir. I hope you have a great day. Okay.
Bye. Thanks, man. Bye.